I stood by the fire to wait, holding my fingers close to the flame to warm them a little before the inevitable handshake. Not that Jay wasn't obviously aware that there was something up with the Cullens, but it was still a good habit to practice. For one half second, I wondered what it would feel like to put my hand in the fire. What it would feel like when I burned. Jay's entrance distracted my morbidity. The maitre d' took his coat, too, and it was evident that I was not the only one who had dressed up for this meeting. "I'm so sorry I'm late," Jay said as soon as we were alone. "No, you're exactly on time." He held out his hand, and as we shook, I could feel that his fingers were still quite noticeably warmer than mine. It didn't seem to bother him. "You look stunning, if I may be so bold, Mrs. Cullen." "Thank you, Jay. Please call me Bella. I must say, it's a different experience working with you than it is with Mr. Jasper. Much less unsettling." He smiled hesitantly. "Really? I've always found Jasper to have a very soothing presence." His eyebrows pulled together. "Is that so?" he murmured politely while clearly still in disagreement. How odd. What had Jasper done to this man? "Have you known Jasper long?" He sighed, looking uncomfortable. "I've been working with Mr. Jasper for more than 20 years, and my old partner knew him for 15 years before that. He never changes." Jay cringed delicately. "Yeah, Jasper's kind of funny that way." Jay shook his head as if he could shake away the disturbing thoughts. "Won't you have a seat, Bella? Actually, I'm in a bit of a hurry. I've got a long drive home." As I spoke, I took the thick white envelope with his bonus from my bag and handed it to him. "Oh," he said, a little catch of disappointment in his voice. He tucked the envelope into an inside pocket of his jacket without bothering to check the amount. "I was hoping we could speak for just a moment." "About?" I asked curiously. "Well, let me get you your items first. I want to make sure you're satisfied." He turned, placed his briefcase on the table, and popped the latches. He took out a legal-sized manila envelope. Though I had no idea what I should be looking for, I opened the envelope and gave the contents a cursory glance. Jay had flipped Jacob's picture and changed the coloring so that it wasn't immediately evident that it was the same picture on both his passport and driver's license. Both looked perfectly sound to me, but that meant little. I glanced at the picture on Vanessa Wolfe's passport for a fraction of a second, and then looked away quickly, a lump rising in my throat. "Thank you," I told him. His eyes narrowed slightly, and I felt he was disappointed that my examination was not more thorough. "I can assure you every piece is perfect. All will pass the most rigorous scrutiny by experts." "I'm sure they are. I truly appreciate what you've done for me, Jay." "It's been my pleasure, Bella. In the future, feel free to come to me for anything the Cullen family needs." He didn't even hint at it, really, but this sounded like an invitation for me to take over Jasper's place as liaison. "There was something you wanted to discuss?"
Yes. It's a bit delicate."
He gestured to the stone hearth with a questioning expression. I sat on the edge of the stone and he sat beside me. Sweat was dewing up on his forehead again, and he pulled a blue silk handkerchief from his pocket and began mopping.
"You are the sister of Mr. Jasper's wife, or married to his brother?" he asked.
"Married to his brother," I clarified, wondering where this was leading.
"You would be Mr. Edward's bride, then?"
"Yes." He smiled apologetically.
"I've seen all the names many times, you see. My belated congratulations. It's nice that Mr. Edward has found such a lovely partner after all this time."
"Thank you very much." He paused, dabbing at the sweat. "Over the years, you might imagine that I've developed a very healthy level of respect for Mr. Jasper and the entire family." I nodded cautiously. He took a deep breath and then exhaled without speaking.
"Jay, please just say whatever you need to."
He took another breath and then mumbled quickly, slurring the words together.
"If you could just assure me that you are not planning to kidnap the little girl from her father, I would sleep better tonight."
"Oh," I said, stunned. It took me a minute to understand the erroneous conclusion he'd drawn.
"Oh, no, it's nothing like that at all."
I smiled weakly, trying to reassure him. "I'm simply preparing a safe place for her in case something were to happen to my husband and me." His eyes narrowed.
Are you expecting something to happen? He blushed, then apologized. Not that it's any of my business.
I watched the red flush spread behind the delicate membrane of his skin and was glad, as I often was, that I was not the average newborn. Jay seemed a nice enough man, criminal behavior aside, and it would have been a shame to kill him.
You never know, I sighed.
He frowned.
May I wish you the best of luck, then. And please don't be put out with me, my dear, but if Mr. Jasper should come to me and ask what names I put on these documents, of course you should tell him immediately. I'd like nothing better than to have Mr. Jasper fully aware of our entire transaction.
My transparent sincerity seemed to ease a bit of his tension.
Very good, he said. And I can't prevail upon you to stay for dinner?
I'm sorry, Jay. I'm short on time at present.
Then again, my best wishes for your health and happiness. Anything at all the Cullen family needs, please don't hesitate to call on me, Bella.
Thank you, Jay. I left with my contraband, glancing back to see that Jay was staring after me, his expression a mixture of anxiety and regret. The return trip took me less time. The night was black, and so I turned off my headlights and floored it. When I got back to the house, most of the cars, including Alice's Porsche and my Ferrari, were missing. The traditional vampires were going as far away as possible to satiate their thirst. I tried not to think of their hunting in the night, cringing at the mental picture of their victims. Only Kate and Garrett were in the front room, arguing playfully about the nutritional value of animal blood. I inferred that Garrett had attempted a hunting trip vegetarian style and found it difficult. Edward must have taken Renesmee home to sleep. Jacob, no doubt, was in the woods close by the cottage. The rest of my family must have been hunting as well. Perhaps they were out with the other Denalis. Which basically gave me the house to myself, and I was quick to take advantage. I could smell that I was the first one to enter Alice and Jasper's room in a long while, maybe the first since the night they'd left us. I rooted silently through their huge closet until I found the right sort of bag. It must have been Alice's. It was a small black leather backpack, the kind that was usually used as a purse, little enough that even Renesmee could carry it without looking out of place. Then I raided their petty cash, taking about twice the yearly income for the average American household. I guessed my theft would be less noticeable here than anywhere else in the house, since this room made everyone sad. The envelope with the fake passports and IDs went into the bag on top of the money. Then I sat on the edge of Alice and Jasper's bed and looked at the pitifully insignificant package that was all I could give my daughter and my best friend to help save their lives. I slumped against the bedpost, feeling helpless. But what else could I do? I sat there for several minutes with my head bowed before the inkling of a good idea came to me. If I was to assume that Jacob and Renesmee were going to escape, then that included the assumption that Dimitri would be dead. That gave any survivors a little breathing room, Alice and Jasper included. So why couldn't Alice and Jasper help Jacob and Renesmee? If they were reunited, Renesmee would have the best protection imaginable. There was no reason why this couldn't happen, except for the fact that Jake and Renesmee both were blind spots for Alice. How would she begin to look for them? I deliberated for a moment, then left the room, crossing the hall to Carlisle and Esme's suite. As usual, Esme's desk was stacked with plans and blueprints, everything neatly laid out in tall piles. The desk had a slew of pigeonholes above the work surface. In one was a box of stationery. I took a fresh sheet of paper and pen. Then I stared at the blank ivory page for a full 5 minutes, concentrating on my decision. Alice might not be able to see Jacob or Renesmee, but she could see me. I visualized her seeing this moment, hoping desperately that she wasn't too busy to pay attention. Slowly, deliberately, I wrote the words Rio de Janeiro in all caps across the page. Rio seemed the best place to send them. It was far away from here. Alice and Jasper were already in South America at last report, and it wasn't like our old problems had ceased to exist just because we had worse problems now. There was still the mystery of Renesmee's future, the terror of her racing age. We'd been headed south anyway. Now it would be Jacob's, and hopefully Alice's job to search for the legends. I bowed my head again against a sudden urge to sob, clenching my teeth together.
It was better that Renesmee go on without me. But I already missed her so much I could barely stand it. I took a deep breath and put the note at the bottom of the duffel bag, where Jacob would find it soon enough. I crossed my fingers that, since it was unlikely that his high school offered Portuguese, Jake had at least taken Spanish as his language elective. There was nothing left now but waiting. For 2 days, Edward and Carlyle stayed in the clearing where Alice had seen the Volturi arrive. It was the same killing field where Victoria's newborns had attacked last summer. I wondered if it felt repetitive to Carlyle, like deja vu. For me, it would be all new. This time, Edward and I would stand with our family. We could only imagine that the Volturi would be tracking either Edward or Carlyle. I wondered if it would surprise them that their prey didn't run. Would that make them wary? I couldn't imagine the Volturi ever feeling a need for caution. Though I was, hopefully, invisible to Dimitri, I stayed with Edward. Of course, we only had a few hours left to be together. Edward and I had not had a last grand scene of farewell, nor did I plan one. To speak the word was to make it final. It would be the same as typing the words "the end" on the last page of a manuscript. So we did not say our goodbyes, and we stayed very close to each other, always touching. Whatever end found us, it would not find us separated. We set up a tent for Renesmee a few yards back into the protective forest. And then there was more deja vu as we found ourselves camping in the cold again with Jacob. It was almost impossible to believe how much things had changed since last June. 7 months ago, our triangular relationship seemed impossible. Three different kinds of heartbreak that could not be avoided. Now everything was in perfect balance. It seemed hideously ironic that the puzzle pieces would fit together just in time for all of them to be destroyed. It started to snow again the night before New Year's Eve. This time, the tiny flakes did not dissolve into the stony ground of the clearing. While Renesmee and Jacob slept, Jacob snoring so loudly I wondered how Renesmee didn't wake. The snow made first a thin icing over the earth, then built into thicker drifts. By the time the sun rose, the scene from Alice's vision was complete. Edward and I held hands as we stared across the glittering white field, and neither of us spoke. Through the early morning, the others gathered, their eyes bearing mute evidence of their preparations, some like gold, some rich crimson. Soon after we all were together, we could hear the wolves moving in the woods. Jacob emerged from the tent, leaving Renesmee still sleeping to join them. Edward and Carlyle were arraying the others into a loose formation, our witnesses to the sides like galleries. I watched from a distance, waiting by the tent for Renesmee to wake. When she did, I helped her dress in the clothes I'd carefully picked out 2 days before. Clothes that looked frilly and feminine, but that were actually sturdy enough to not show any wear. Even if a person wore them while riding a giant werewolf through a couple of states. Over her jacket, I put on the black leather backpack with the documents, the money, the clue, and my love notes for her and Jacob, Charlie, and Renee. She was strong enough that it was no burden to her. Her eyes were huge as she read the agony on my face, but she had guessed enough not to ask me what I was doing. "I love you," I told her, "more than anything." "I love you too, Mama," she answered. She touched the locket at her neck, which now held a tiny photo of her, Edward, and me. "We'll always be together. In our hearts, we'll always be together," I corrected in a whisper as quiet as a breath. "But when the time comes today, you have to leave me." Her eyes widened and she touched her hand to my cheek. The silent no was louder than if she'd shouted it. I fought to swallow. My throat felt swollen. "Will you do it for me, please?" She pressed her fingers harder to my face.
"Why?"
"I can't tell you," I whispered. "But you'll understand soon, I promise." In my head, I saw Jacob's face. I nodded, then pulled her fingers away.
"Don't think of it," I breathed into her ear.
"Don't tell Jacob until I tell you to run, okay?" This she understood. She nodded too.
I took from my pocket one last detail. While packing Renesmee's things, an unexpected sparkle of color had caught my eye. A chance ray of sun through the skylight had hit the jewels on the ancient precious box stuffed high overhead on a shelf in an untouched corner. I considered it for a moment and then shrugged. After putting together Alice's clues, I couldn't hope that the coming confrontation would be resolved peacefully. But why not try to start things out as friendly as possible, I asked myself. What could it hurt? So I guess I must have had some hope left after all. Blind, senseless hope. Because I'd scaled the shelves and retrieved Aro's wedding present to me. Now I fastened the thick gold rope around my neck and felt the weight of the enormous diamond nestle into the hollow of my throat. Pretty, Renesmee whispered. Then she wrapped her arms like a vice around my neck. I squeezed her against my chest. Interlocked this way, I carried her out of the tent and to the clearing. Edward cocked one eyebrow as I approached, but otherwise did not remark on my accessory or Renesmee's. He just put his arms tight around us both for one long moment, and then, with a deep sigh, let us go. I couldn't see a goodbye anywhere in his eyes. Maybe he had more hope for something after this life than he'd let on. We took our place, Renesmee climbing agilely onto my back to leave my hands free. I stood a few feet behind the front line, made up by Carlyle, Edward, Emmett, Rosalie, Tanya, Kate, and Eliezer. Close beside me were Benjamin and Zafrina. It was my job to protect them as long as I was able. They were our best offensive weapons. If the Volturi were the ones who could not see, even for a few moments, that would change everything. Zafrina was rigid and fierce, with Senna almost a mirror image at her side. Benjamin sat on the ground, his palms pressed to the dirt, and muttered quietly about fault lines. Last night, he'd strewn piles of boulders in natural-looking, now snow-covered heaps all along the back of the meadow. They weren't enough to injure a vampire, but hopefully enough to distract one. The witnesses clustered to our left and right, some nearer than others. Those who had declared themselves were the closest. I noticed Siobhan rubbing her temples, her eyes closed in concentration. Was she humoring Carlyle, trying to visualize a diplomatic resolution? In the woods behind us, the invisible wolves were still and ready. We could only hear their heavy panting, their beating hearts. The clouds rolled in, diffusing the light so that it could have been morning or afternoon. Edward's eyes tightened as he scrutinized the view, and I was sure he was seeing this exact scene for the second time, the first time being Alice's vision. It would look just the same when the Volturi arrived. We only had minutes or seconds left now. All our family and allies braced themselves. From the forest, the huge, russet alpha wolf came forward to stand at my side. It must have been too hard for him to keep his distance from Renesmee when she was in such immediate danger. Renesmee reached out to twine her fingers in the fur over his massive shoulder, and her body relaxed a little bit. She was calmer with Jacob close. I felt a tiny bit better, too. As long as Jacob was with Renesmee, she would be all right. Without risking a glance behind, Edward reached back to me. I stretched my arm forward so that I could grip his hand. He squeezed my fingers. Another minute ticked by, and I found myself straining to hear some sound of approach. And then Edward stiffened and hissed low between his clenched teeth. His eyes focused on the forest due north of where we stood. We stared where he did, and waited as the last seconds passed. Chapter 36, Bloodlust. They came with pageantry, with a kind of beauty. They came in a rigid, formal formation. They moved together, but it was not a march. They flowed in perfect synchronicity from the trees, a dark, unbroken shape that seemed to hover a few inches above the white snow. So smooth was the advance. The outer perimeter was gray. The color darkened with each line of bodies until the heart of the formation was deepest black. Every face was cowled, shadowed. The faint brushing sound of their feet was so regular it was like music. a complicated beat that never faltered. At some sign I did not see, or perhaps there was no sign, only millennia of practice, the configuration folded outward. The motion was too stiff, too square to resemble the opening of a flower, though the color suggested that. It was the opening of a fan, graceful but very angular. The gray-cloaked figures spread to the flanks, while the darker forms surged precisely forward in the center, each movement closely controlled. Their progress was slow but deliberate, with no hurry, no tension, no anxiety. It was the pace of the invincible. This was almost my old nightmare. The only thing lacking was the gloating desire I'd seen on the faces in my dream, the smiles of vindictive joy. Thus far, the Volturi were too disciplined to show any emotion at all. They also showed no surprise or dismay at the collection of vampires that waited for them here, a collection that looked suddenly disorganized and unprepared in comparison. They showed no surprise at the giant wolf that stood in our midst. I couldn't help counting. There were 32 of them. Even if you did not count the two drifting, waifish black-cloaked figures in the very back, who I took to be the wives, their protected position suggesting that they would not be involved in the attack, we were still outnumbered. There were just 19 of us who would fight, and then 7 more to watch as we were destroyed. Even counting the 10 wolves, they had us. "The redcoats are coming, the redcoats are coming," Garrett muttered mysteriously to himself and then chuckled once. He slid one step closer to Kate. "They did come," Vladimir whispered to Stefan. "The wives," Stefan hissed back. "The entire guard, all of them together. It's well we didn't try Volterra." And then, as if their numbers were not enough, while the Volturi slowly and majestically advanced, more vampires began entering the clearing behind them. The faces in this seemingly endless influx of vampires were the antithesis to the Volturi's expressionless discipline. They wore a kaleidoscope of emotions. At first there was the shock and even some anxiety as they saw the unexpected force awaiting them. But that concern passed quickly. They were secure in their overwhelming numbers, secure in their position behind the unstoppable Volturi force. Their features returned to the expression they'd worn before we'd surprised them. It was easy enough to understand their mindset. The faces were that explicit. This was an angry mob, whipped to a frenzy and slavering for justice. I did not fully realize the vampire world's feeling toward the immortal children before I read these faces. It was clear that this motley, disorganized horde, more than 40 vampires altogether, was the Volturi's own kind of witness. When we were dead, they would spread the word that the criminals had been eradicated, that the Volturi had acted with nothing but impartiality. Most looked like they hoped for more than just an opportunity to witness. They wanted to help tear and burn. We didn't have a prayer. Even if we could somehow neutralize the Volturi's advantages, they could still bury us in bodies. Even if we killed Dimitri, Jacob would not be able to outrun this. I could feel it as the same comprehension sunk in around me. Despair weighted the air, pushing me down with more pressure than before. One vampire in the opposing force did not seem to belong to either party. I recognized Irina as she hesitated in between the two companies, her expression unique among the others. Irina's horrified gaze was locked on Tanya's position in the front line. Edward snarled, a very low but fervent sound. "Alistair was right," he murmured to Carlyle. I watched Carlyle glance at Edward questioningly. "Alistair was right?" Tanya whispered. "They, Caius and Aro, come to destroy and acquire," Edward breathed almost silently back. Only our side could hear. "They have many layers of strategy already in place. If Irina's accusation had somehow proven to be false, they were committed to find another reason to take offense. But they can see Renesmee now, so they are perfectly sanguine about their course. We could still attempt to defend against their other contrived charges, but first they have to stop, to hear the truth about Renesmee." Then even lower, which they have no intention of doing. Jacob gave a strange little huff. And then, unexpectedly, 2 seconds later, the procession did halt. The low music of perfectly synchronized movements turned to silence. The flawless discipline remained unbroken. The Volturi froze into absolute stillness, as one. They stood about 100 yards away from us. Behind me, to the sides, I heard the beating of large hearts, closer than before. I risked glances to the left and the right from the corners of my eyes to see what had stopped the Volturi advance. The wolves had joined us. On either side of our uneven line, the wolves branched out in long, bordering arms. I only spared a fraction of a second to note that there were more than 10 wolves, to recognize the wolves I knew and the ones I'd never seen before. There were 16 of them spaced evenly around us, 17 total, counting Jacob. It was clear from their heights and oversized paws that the newcomers all were very, very young. I supposed I should have foreseen this. With so many vampires encamped in the neighborhood, a werewolf population explosion was inevitable. More children dying. I wondered why Sam had allowed this, and then I realized he had no other choice. If any of the wolves stood with us, the Volturi would be sure to search out the rest. They had gambled their entire species on this stand, and we were going to lose. Abruptly, I was furious. Beyond furious, I was murderously enraged. My hopeless despair vanished entirely. A faint reddish glow highlighted the dark figures in front of me, and all I wanted in that moment was the chance to sink my teeth into them, to rip their limbs from their bodies and pile them for burning. I was so maddened I could have danced around the pyre where they roasted alive. I would have laughed while their ashes smoldered. My lips curved back automatically, and a low, fierce snarl tore up my throat from the pit of my stomach. I realized the corners of my mouth were turned up in a smile. Beside me, Zafrina and Senna echoed my hushed growl. Edward squeezed the hand he still held, cautioning me. The shadowed Volturi faces were still expressionless for the most part. Only 2 sets of eyes betrayed any emotion at all. In the very center, touching hands, Aro and Caius had paused to evaluate, and the entire guard had paused with them, waiting for the order to kill. The two did not look at each other, but it was obvious that they were communicating. Marcus, though, touching Aro's other hand, did not seem part of the conversation. His expression was not as mindless as the guard's, but it was nearly as blank. Like the one other time I'd seen him, he appeared to be utterly bored. The bodies of the Volturi's witnesses leaned toward us, their eyes fixed furiously on Renesmee and me, but they stayed near the fringe of the forest, leaving a wide berth between themselves and the Volturi soldiers. Only Irina hovered close behind the Volturi, just a few paces away from the ancient females, both fair-haired with powdery skin and filmed eyes, and their 2 massive bodyguards. There was a woman in one of the darker gray cloaks just behind Aro. I couldn't be sure, but it looked like she might actually be touching his back. Was this the other shield, Renata? I wondered, as Eliezer had, if she would be able to repel me. But I would not waste my life trying to get to Caius or Aro. I had more vital targets. I searched the line for them now and had no difficulty picking out the 2 petite, deep gray cloaks near the heart of the arrangement. Alec and Jane, easily the smallest members of the guard, stood just to Marcus's side, flanked by Dimitri on the other. Their lovely faces were smooth, giving nothing away. They wore the darkest cloaks beside the pure black of the ancients. The witch twins, Vladimir had called them. Their powers were the cornerstone of the Volturi offensive, the jewels in Aro's collection. My muscles flexed, and venom welled in my mouth. Aro's and Caius's clouded red eyes flickered across our line. I read disappointment in Aro's face as his gaze roved over our faces again and again, looking for one that was missing. Chagrin tightened his lips. In that moment, I was nothing but grateful that Alice had run. As the pause lengthened, I heard Edward's breath speed. "Edward?" Carlyle asked, low and anxious. They're not sure how to proceed. They're weighing options, choosing key targets. Me, of course, you, Eliezer, Tanya. Marcus is reading the strength of our ties to each other, looking for weak points. The Romanian's presence irritates them. They're worried about the faces they don't recognize, Safrina and Senna in particular, and the wolves, naturally. They've never been outnumbered before. That's what stopped them.
Outnumbered? Tanya whispered incredulously.
They don't count their witnesses, Edward breathed. They are non-entities, meaningless to the guard. Aro just enjoys an audience.
Should I speak?
Carlyle asked. Edward hesitated, then nodded. This is the only chance you'll get. Carlyle squared his shoulders and paced several steps ahead of our defensive line. I hated to see him alone, unprotected. He spread his arms, holding his palms up as if in greeting. Aro, my old friend, it's been centuries. The white clearing was dead silent for a long moment. I could feel the tension rolling off Edward as he listened to Aro's assessment of Carlyle's words. The strain mounted as the seconds ticked by. And then Aro stepped forward out of the center of the Volturi formation. The shield, Renata, moved with him as if the tips of her fingers were sewn to his robe. For the first time, the Volturi ranks reacted. A muttered grumble rolled through the line. Eyebrows lowered into scowls, lips curled back from teeth. A few of the guard leaned forward into a crouch. Aro held one hand up toward them. Peace. He walked just a few paces more, then cocked his head to one side. His milky eyes glinted with curiosity. Fair words, Carlyle, he breathed in his thin, wispy voice. They seem out of place, considering the army you've assembled to kill me and to kill my dear ones. Carlyle shook his head and stretched his right hand forward as if there were not still almost 100 yards between them. You have but to touch my hand to know that was never my intent. Aro's shrewd eyes narrowed. But how can your intent possibly matter, dear Carlyle, in the face of what you have done? He frowned, and a shadow of sadness crossed his features. Whether it was genuine or not, I could not tell. I have not committed the crime you are here to punish me for. Then step aside and let us punish those responsible. Truly, Carlyle, nothing would please me more than to preserve your life today. No one has broken the law, Aro. Let me explain. Again, Carlyle offered his hand. Before Aro could answer, Caius drifted swiftly forward to Aro's side. So many pointless rules, so many unnecessary laws you create for yourself, Carlyle, the white-haired ancient hissed. How is it possible that you defend the breaking of one that truly matters? The law is not broken. If you would listen, we see the child, Carlyle, Caius snarled. Do not treat us as fools. She is not an immortal. She is not a vampire. I can easily prove this with just a few moments. Caius cut him off. If she is not one of the forbidden, then why have you massed a battalion to protect her? Witnesses, Caius, just as you have brought. Carlyle gestured to the angry horde at the edge of the woods. Some of them growled in response. Any one of these friends can tell you the truth about the child. Or you could just look at her, Caius. See the flush of human blood in her cheeks? Artifice, Caius snapped. Where is the informer? Let her come forward. He craned his neck around until he spotted Irina lingering behind the wives. You, come. Irina stared at him uncomprehendingly, her face like that of someone who has not entirely awakened from a hideous nightmare. Impatiently, Caius snapped his fingers. One of the wives' huge bodyguards moved to Irina's side and prodded her roughly in the back. Irina blinked twice and then walked slowly toward Caius in a daze. She stopped several yards short, her eyes still on her sister's. Caius closed the distance between them and slapped her across the face. It couldn't have hurt, but there was something terribly degrading about the action. It was like watching someone kick a dog. Tanya and Kate hissed in synchronization. Irina's body went rigid and her eyes finally focused on Caius. He pointed one clawed finger at Renesmee, where she clung to my back, her fingers still tangled in Jacob's fur. Caius turned entirely red in my furious view. A growl rumbled through Jacob's chest. "This is the child you saw?" Caius demanded. "The one that was obviously more than human?" Irina peered at us, examining Renesmee for the first time since entering the clearing. Her head tilted to the side. Confusion crossed her features.
"Well?" Caius snarled.
I'm not sure," she said, her tone perplexed. Caius's hand twitched as if he wanted to slap her again.
"What do you mean?" he said in a steely whisper.
"She's not the same, but I think it's the same child. What I mean is, she's changed. This child is bigger than the one I saw, but..."
Caius's furious gasp crackled through his suddenly bared teeth, and Irina broke off without finishing. Aro flitted to Caius's side and put a restraining hand on his shoulder.
"Be composed, brother. We have time to sort this out. No need to be hasty."
With a sullen expression, Caius turned his back on Irina.
"Now, sweetling," Aro said in a warm, sugary murmur, "show me what you're trying to say."
He held his hand out to the bewildered vampire. Uncertainly, Irina took his hand. He held hers for only 5 seconds.
"You see, Caius," he said, "it's a simple matter to get what we need."
Caius didn't answer him. From the corner of his eye, Aro glanced once at his audience, his mob, and then turned back to Carlyle.
"And so we have a mystery on our hands, it seems. It would appear the child has grown. Yet Irina's first memory was clearly that of an immortal child. Curious."
"That's exactly what I'm trying to explain," Carlyle said, and from the change in his voice I could guess at his relief. This was the pause we had pinned all our nebulous hopes on. I felt no relief. I waited, almost numb with rage, for the layers of strategy Edward had promised. Carlyle held out his hand again. Aro hesitated for a moment.
"I would rather have the explanation from someone more central to the story, my friend. Am I wrong to assume that this breach was not of your making?"
"There was no breach."
"Be that as it may, I will have every facet of the truth."
Aro's feathery voice hardened.
"And the best way to get that is to have the evidence directly from your talented son."
He inclined his head in Edward's direction.
"As the child clings to his newborn mate, I'm assuming Edward is involved."
Of course he wanted Edward. Once he could see into Edward's mind, he would know all our thoughts, except mine. Edward turned to quickly kiss my forehead and Renesmee's, not meeting my eyes. Then he strode across the snowy field, clapping Carlyle on the shoulder as he passed. I heard a low whimper from behind me, Esme's terror breaking through. The red haze I saw around the Volturi army flamed brighter than before. I could not bear to watch Edward cross the empty white space alone, but I also could not endure to have Renesmee one step closer to our adversaries. The opposing needs tore at me. I was frozen so tightly it felt like my bones might shatter from the pressure of it. I saw Jane smile as Edward crossed the midpoint in the distance between us, when he was closer to them than he was to us. That smug little smile did it. My fury peaked, higher even than the raging bloodlust I'd felt the moment the wolves had committed to this doomed fight. I could taste madness on my tongue. I felt it flow through me like a tidal wave of pure power. My muscles tightened and I acted automatically. I threw my shield with all the force in my mind, flung it across the impossible expanse of the field, 10 times my best distance, like a javelin. My breath rushed out in a huff with the exertion. The shield blew out for me in a bubble of sheer energy, a mushroom cloud of liquid steel. It pulsed like a living thing. I could feel it, from the apex to the edges. There was no recoil to the elastic fabric now,
In that instant of raw force, I saw that the backlash I'd felt before was of my own making. I had been clinging to that invisible part of me in self-defense, subconsciously unwilling to let it go. Now, I set it free, and my shield exploded a good 50 yards out from me effortlessly, taking only a fraction of my concentration. I could feel it flex like just another muscle, obedient to my will. I pushed it, shaped it to a long, pointed oval. Everything underneath the flexible iron shield was suddenly a part of me. I could feel the life force of everything it covered like points of bright heat, dazzling sparks of light surrounding me. I thrust the shield forward the length of the clearing and exhaled in relief when I felt Edward's brilliant light within my protection. I held there, contracting this new muscle so that it closely surrounded Edward, a thin but unbreakable sheet between his body and our enemies. Barely a second had passed. Edward was still walking to Auro. Everything had changed, absolutely, but no one had noticed the explosion except for me. A startled laugh burst through my lips. I felt the others glancing at me and saw Jacob's big black eye roll down to stare at me like I'd lost my mind. Edward stopped a few steps away from Auro, and I realized with some chagrin that though I certainly could, I should not prevent this exchange from happening. This was the point of all our preparations, getting Auro to hear our side of the story. It was almost physically painful to do it, but reluctantly I pulled my shield back and left Edward exposed again. The laughing mood had vanished. I focused totally on Edward, ready to shield him instantly if something went wrong. Edward's chin came up arrogantly, and he held his hand out to Auro as if he were conferring a great honor. Auro seemed only delighted with his attitude, but his delight was not universal. Renata fluttered nervously in Aro's shadow. Caius's scowl was so deep it looked like his papery, translucent skin would crease permanently. Little Jane showed her teeth, and beside her, Alex's eyes narrowed in concentration. I guessed that he was ready, like me, to act at a second's notice. Auro closed the distance without pause, and really, what did he have to fear? The hulking shadows of the lighter gray cloaks, the brawny fighters like Felix, were but a few yards away. Jane and her burning gift could throw Edward on the ground writhing in agony. Alec could blind and deafen him before he could take a step in Aro's direction. No one knew that I had the power to stop them, not even Edward. With an untroubled smile, Auro took Edward's hand. His eyes snapped shut at once, and then his shoulders hunched under the onslaught of information. Every secret thought, every strategy, every insight, everything Edward had heard in the minds around him during the last month was now Auro's. And further back, every vision of Alice's, every quiet moment with our family, every picture in Renesmee's head, every kiss, every touch between Edward and me, all of that was Auro's now too. I hissed with frustration, and the shield roiled with my irritation, shifting its shape and contracting around our side. "Easy, Bella," Zafrina whispered to me. I clenched my teeth together. Auro continued to concentrate on Edward's memories. Edward's head bowed too, the muscles in his neck locking tight as he read back again everything that Auro took from him and Auro's response to it all. This two-way but unequal conversation continued long enough that even the guard grew uneasy. Low murmurs ran through the line until Caius barked a sharp order for silence. Jane was edging forward like she couldn't help herself, and Renata's face was rigid with distress. For a moment, I examined this powerful shield that seemed so panicky and weak. Though she was useful to Auro, I could tell she was no warrior. It was not her job to fight, but to protect. There was no bloodlust in her. Raw as I was, I knew that if this were between her and me, I would obliterate her. I refocused as Auro straightened, his eyes flashing open, their expression awed and wary. He did not release Edward's hand. Edward's muscles loosened ever so slightly. "You see?" Edward asked, his velvet voice calm. "Yes, I see indeed,"
Aro agreed, and amazingly, he sounded almost amused. I doubt whether any two among gods or mortals have ever seen quite so clearly. The disciplined faces of the guard showed the same disbelief I felt. You have given me much to ponder, young friend, Aro continued. Much more than I expected. Still, he did not release Edward's hand, and Edward's tense stance was that of one who listens. Edward didn't answer. May I meet her? Aro asked, almost pleaded with sudden eager interest. I never dreamed of the existence of such a thing in all my centuries. What an addition to our histories. What is this about, Aro? Caius snapped before Edward could answer. Just the question had me pulling Renesmee around into my arms, cradling her protectively against my chest. Something you've never dreamed of, my practical friend. Take a moment to ponder, for the justice we intended to deliver no longer applies. Caius hissed in surprise at his words. Peace, brother, Aro cautioned soothingly. This should have been good news. These were the words we'd been hoping for, the reprieve we never really thought possible. Aro had listened to the truth. Aro had admitted that the law had not been broken. But my eyes were riveted on Edward, and I saw the muscles in his back tighten. I replayed in my head Aro's instruction for Caius to ponder and heard the double meaning. Will you introduce me to your daughter? Aro asked Edward again. Caius was not the only one who hissed at this new revelation. Edward nodded reluctantly. And yet, Renesmee had won over so many others. Aro always seemed the leader of the ancients. If he were on her side, could the others act against us? Aro still gripped Edward's hand, and he now answered a question that the rest of us had not heard. I think a compromise on this one point is certainly acceptable, under the circumstance. We will meet in the middle. Aro released his hand. Edward turned back toward us, and Aro joined him, throwing one arm casually over Edward's shoulder like they were the best of friends, all the while maintaining contact with Edward's skin. They began to cross the field back to our side. The entire guard fell into step behind them. Aro raised a hand negligently without looking at them. Hold, my dear ones. Truly, they mean us no harm if we are peaceable. The guard reacted to this more openly than before, with snarls and hisses of protest, but held their position. Renata, clinging closer to Aro than ever, whimpered in anxiety. Master, she whispered. Don't fret, my love, he responded. All is well. Perhaps you should bring a few members of your guard with us, Edward suggested. It will make them more comfortable. Aro nodded as if this was a wise observation he should have thought of himself. He snapped his fingers twice. Felix, Dimitri. The two vampires were at his side instantaneously, looking precisely the same as the last time I'd met them. Both were tall and dark-haired, Dimitri hard and lean as the blade of a sword, Felix hulking and menacing as an iron-spiked cudgel. The five of them stopped in the middle of the snowy field. Bella, Edward called. Bring Renesmee. And a few friends. I took a deep breath. My body was tight with opposition. The idea of taking Renesmee into the center of the conflict. But I trusted Edward. He would know if Aro was planning any treachery at this point. Aro had three protectors on his side of the summit, so I would bring two with me. It took me only a second to decide. Jacob? Emmett? I asked quietly. Emmett because he would be dying to go. Jacob because he wouldn't be able to bear being left behind. Both nodded. Emmett grinned. I crossed the field with them flanking me. I heard another rumble from the guard as they saw my choices. Clearly they did not trust the werewolf. Aro lifted his hand, waving away their protest again. Interesting company you keep. Dimitri murmured to Edward. Edward didn't respond, but a low growl slipped through Jacob's teeth. We stopped a few yards from Aro. Edward ducked under Aro's arm and quickly joined us, taking my hand. For a moment, we faced each other in silence. Then Felix greeted me in a low aside.
Hello again, Bella.
He grinned cockily while still tracking Jacob's every twitch with his peripheral vision. I smiled wryly at the mountainous vampire. Hey, Felix. Felix chuckled.
You look good.
Immortality suits you.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
It's too bad.
He let his comment trail off into silence, but I didn't need Edward's gift to imagine the end. It's too bad we're going to kill you in a sec.
Yes, too bad, isn't it? I murmured.
Felix winked. Aro paid no attention to our exchange. He leaned his head to one side, fascinated.
I hear her strange heart, he murmured with an almost musical lilt to his words. I smell her strange scent.
Then his hazy eyes shifted to me.
In truth, young Bella, immortality does become you most extraordinarily, he said. It is as if you were designed for this life.
I nodded once in acknowledgement of his flattery.
You liked my gift?
He asked, eyeing the pendant I wore. It's beautiful and very, very generous of you. Thank you. I probably should have sent a note.
Aro laughed delightedly. It's just a little something I had lying around. I thought it might complement your new face, and so it does.
I heard a little hiss from the center of the Volturi line. I glanced over Aro's shoulder. It seemed Jane wasn't happy about the fact that Aro had given me a present. Aro cleared his throat to reclaim my attention.
May I greet your daughter, lovely Bella? He asked sweetly.
This was what we'd hoped for, I reminded myself. Fighting the urge to take Renesmee and run for it, I walked two slow steps forward. My shield rippled out behind me like a cape, protecting the rest of my family while Renesmee was left exposed. It felt wrong, horrible.
Aro met us, his face beaming. But she's exquisite, he murmured. So like you and Edward.
And then louder.
Hello, Renesmee.
Renesmee looked at me quickly. I nodded.
Hello, Aro,
she answered formally in her high, ringing voice. Aro's eyes were bemused.
What is it?
Caius hissed from behind. He seemed infuriated by the need to ask.
Half mortal, half immortal,
Aro announced to him and the rest of the guard, without turning his enthralled gaze from Renesmee.
Conceived so, and carried by this newborn while she was still human. Impossible, Caius scoffed. Do you think they fooled me then, brother?
Aro's expression was greatly amused, but Caius flinched.
Is the heartbeat you hear a trickery as well?
Caius scowled, looking as chagrined as if Aro's gentle questions had been blows.
Calmly and carefully, brother, Aro cautioned, still smiling at Renesmee. I know well how you love your justice, but there is no justice in acting against this unique little one for her parentage. And so much to learn, so much to learn. I know you don't have my enthusiasm for collecting histories, but be tolerant with me, brother, as I add a chapter that stuns me with its improbability. We came expecting only justice and the sadness of false friends, but look what we have gained instead. A new bright knowledge of ourselves, our possibilities.
He held out his hand to Renesmee in invitation, but this was not what she wanted. She leaned away from me, stretching upward to touch her fingertips to Aro's face. Aro did not react with shock as almost everyone else had reacted to this performance from Renesmee. He was as used to the flow of thought and memory from other minds as Edward was. His smile widened, and he sighed in satisfaction.
Brilliant, he whispered.
Renesmee relaxed back into my arms, her little face very serious.
Please?
She asked him. His smile turned gentle.
Of course I have no desire to harm your loved ones, precious Renesmee.
Aro's voice was so comforting and affectionate, it took me in for a second. And then I heard Edward's teeth grind together, and far behind us, Maggie's outraged hiss at the lie.
I wonder, Aro said thoughtfully, seeming unaware of the reaction to his previous words. His eyes moved unexpectedly to Jacob, and instead of the disgust the other Volturi viewed the giant wolf with, Aro's eyes were filled with a longing that I did not comprehend.
It doesn't work that way, Edward said, the careful neutrality gone from his suddenly harsh tone.
Just an errant thought, Aro said, appraising Jacob openly. And then his eyes moved slowly across the two lines of werewolves behind us. Whatever Renesmee had shown him, it made the wolves suddenly interesting to him. They don't belong to us, Aro. They don't follow our commands that way. They are here because they want to be. Jacob growled menacingly. They seem quite attached to you, though, Aro said. And your young mate and your family. Loyal.
His voice caressed the word softly. They're committed to protecting human life, Aro. That makes them able to coexist with us, but hardly with you. Unless you're rethinking your lifestyle.
Aro laughed merrily. Just an errant thought, he repeated. You well know how that is. We none of us can entirely control our subconscious desires.
Edward grimaced. I do know how that is, and I also know the difference between that kind of thought and the kind with a purpose behind it. It could never work, Aro. Jacob's vast head turned in Edward's direction, and a faint whine slipped from between his teeth.
He's intrigued with the idea of guard dogs, Edward murmured back.
There was 1 second of dead silence, and then the sound of the furious snarls ripping from the entire pack filled the giant clearing. There was a sharp bark of command from Sam, I guessed, though I didn't turn to look, and the complaint broke off into ominous quiet.
I suppose that answers that question, Aro said, laughing again. This lot has picked its side.
Edward hissed and leaned forward. I clutched at his arm, wondering what could be in Aro's thoughts that would make him react so violently, while Felix and Dimitri slipped into crouches in synchronization. Aro waved them off again. They all returned to their former posture, Edward included.
So much to discuss, Aro said, his tone suddenly that of an inundated businessman. So much to decide. If you and your furry protector will excuse me, my dear Collins, I must confer with my brothers.
Chapter 37. Contrivances.
Aro did not rejoin his anxious guard waiting on the north side of the clearing. Instead, he waved them forward. Edward started backing up immediately, pulling my arm and Emmett's. We hurried backward, keeping our eyes on the advancing threat. Jacob retreated slowest, the fur on his shoulder standing straight up as he bared his fangs at Aro. Renesmee grabbed the end of his tail as we retreated. She held it like a leash, forcing him to stay with us. We reached our family at the same time that the dark cloak surrounded Aro again. Now there were only 50 yards between them and us, a distance any of us could leap in just a fraction of a second. Caius began arguing with Aro at once.
How can you abide this infamy? Why do we stand here impotently in the face of such an outrageous crime, covered by such a ridiculous deception?
He held his arms rigidly at his sides, his hands curled into claws. I wondered why he did not just touch Aro to share his opinion. Were we seeing a division in their ranks already? Could we be that lucky?
Because it's all true, Aro told him calmly. Every word of it. See how many witnesses stand ready to give evidence that they have seen this miraculous child grow and mature in just the short time they've known her? That they have felt the warmth of the blood that pulses in her veins?
Aro's gesture swept from Amon on one side, across to Siobhan on the other. Caius reacted oddly to Aro's soothing words, starting ever so slightly at the mention of witnesses.
The anger drained from his features, replaced by a cold calculation. He glanced at the Volturi witnesses with an expression that looked vaguely nervous. I glanced at the angry mob, too, and saw immediately that the description no longer applied. The frenzy for action had turned to confusion. Whispered conversations seethed through the crowd as they tried to make sense of what had happened. Caius was frowning deep in thought. His speculative expression stoked the flames of my smoldering anger at the same time that it worried me. What if the guard acted again on some invisible signal as they had in their march? Anxiously, I inspected my shield. It felt just as impenetrable as before. I flexed it now into a low, wide dome that arced over our company. I could feel the sharp plumes of light where my family and friends stood, each one an individual flavor that I thought I would be able to recognize with practice. I already knew Edward's. His was the very brightest of them all. The extra empty space around the shining spots bothered me. There was no physical barrier to the shield, and if any of the talented Volturi got under it, it would protect no one but me. I felt my forehead crease as I pulled the elastic armor very carefully closer. Carlisle was the farthest forward. I sucked the shield back inch by inch, trying to wrap it as exactly to his body as I could. My shield seemed to want to cooperate. It hugged his shape. When Carlisle shifted to the side to stand nearer to Tanya, the elastic stretched with him, drawn to a spark. Fascinated, I tugged in more threads of the fabric, pulling it around each glimmering shape that was a friend or ally. The shield clung to them willingly, moving as they moved. Only a second had passed. Caius was still deliberating. "The werewolves," he murmured at last. With sudden panic, I realized that most of the werewolves were unprotected. I was about to reach out to them when I realized that, strangely, I could still feel their sparks. Curious, I drew the shield tighter in, until Amon and Kebi, the farthest edge of our group, were outside with the wolves. Once they were on the other side, their lights vanished. They no longer existed to that new sense. But the wolves were still bright flames, or rather half of them were. I edged outward again, and as soon as Sam was under cover, all the wolves were brilliant sparks again. Their minds must have been more interconnected than I'd imagined. If the Alpha was inside my shield, the rest of their minds were every bit as protected as his. "Ah, brother," Aro answered Caius's statement with a pained look. "Will you defend that alliance too, Aro?" Caius demanded. "The Children of the Moon have been our bitter enemies from the dawn of time. We have hunted them to near extinction in Europe and Asia. Yet Carlisle encourages a familiar relationship with this enormous infestation, no doubt in an attempt to overthrow us, the better to protect his warped lifestyle." Edward cleared his throat loudly and Caius glared at him. Aro placed one thin, delicate hand over his own face as if he was embarrassed for the other ancient. "Caius, it's the middle of the day," Edward pointed out. He gestured to Jacob. "These are not Children of the Moon, clearly. They bear no relation to your enemies on the other side of the world." "You breed mutants here," Caius spit back at him. Edward's jaw clenched and unclenched, and then he answered evenly, "They aren't even werewolves. Aro can tell you all about it if you don't believe me." "Not werewolves?" I shot a mystified look at Jacob. He lifted his huge shoulders and let them drop. A shrug. He didn't know what Edward was talking about either. "Dear Caius, I would have warned you not to press this point if you had told me your thoughts," Aro murmured. "Though the creatures think of themselves as werewolves, they are not. The more accurate name for them would be shapeshifters. The choice of a wolf form was purely chance. It could have been a bear or a hawk or a panther when the first change was made. These creatures truly have nothing to do with the Children of the Moon. They have merely inherited this skill from their fathers. It's genetic. They do not continue their species by infecting others the way true werewolves do."
Caius glared at Aro with irritation and something more, an accusation of betrayal, maybe.
They know our secret, he said flatly.
Edward looked about to answer this accusation, but Aro spoke faster.
They are creatures of our supernatural world, brother. Perhaps even more dependent upon secrecy than we are. They can hardly expose us. Carefully, Caius. Specious allegations get us nowhere.
Caius took a deep breath and nodded. They exchanged a long, significant glance. I thought I understood the instruction behind Aro's careful wording. False charges weren't helping convince the watching witnesses on either side. Aro was cautioning Caius to move on to the next strategy. I wondered if the reason behind the apparent strain between the two ancients, Caius's unwillingness to share his thoughts with the touch, was that Caius didn't care about the show as much as Aro did. If the coming slaughter was so much more essential to Caius than an untarnished reputation.
I want to talk to the informant, Caius announced abruptly, and turned his glare on Irina.
Irina wasn't paying attention to Caius and Aro's conversation. Her face was twisted in agony, her eyes locked on her sister's, lined up to die. It was clear on her face that she knew now her accusation had been totally false.
Irina,
Caius barked, unhappy to have to address her. She looked up, startled and instantly afraid. Caius snapped his fingers. Hesitantly, she moved from the fringes of the Volturi formation to stand in front of Caius again.
So you appear to have been quite mistaken in your allegations, Caius began.
Tanya and Kate leaned forward anxiously.
I'm sorry, Irina whispered. I should have made sure of what I was seeing, but I had no idea.
She gestured helplessly in our direction.
Dear Caius, could you expect her to have guessed in an instant something so strange and impossible? Aro asked. Any of us would have made the same assumption.
Caius flicked his fingers at Aro to silence him.
We all know you made a mistake, he said brusquely. I meant to speak of your motivations.
Irina waited nervously for him to continue, and then repeated,
My motivations?
Yes, for coming to spy on them in the first place.
Irina flinched at the word spy.
You are unhappy with the Cullens, were you not?
She turned her miserable eyes to Carlyle's face.
I was, she admitted.
Because?
Caius prompted.
Because the werewolves killed my friend, she whispered, and the Cullens wouldn't stand aside to let me avenge him.
The shapeshifters, Aro corrected quietly. So the Cullens sided with the shapeshifters against our own kind. Against the friend of a friend, even, Caius summarized.
I heard Edward make a disgusted sound under his breath. Caius was ticking down his list, looking for an accusation that would stick. Irina's shoulders stiffened.
That's how I saw it.
Caius waited again and then prompted.
If you'd like to make a formal complaint against the shapeshifters and the Cullens for supporting their actions, now would be the time.
He smiled a tiny, cruel smile, waiting for Irina to give him his next excuse. Maybe Caius didn't understand real families, relationships based on love rather than just the love of power. Maybe he overestimated the potency of vengeance. Irina's jaw jerked up. Her shoulders squared.
No, I have no complaint against the wolves or the Cullens. You came here today to destroy an immortal child. No immortal child exists. This was my mistake, and I take full responsibility for it. But the Cullens are innocent, and you have no reason to still be here. I'm so sorry, she said to us,
and then she turned her face toward the Volturi witnesses.
There was no crime. There's no valid reason for you to continue here.
Caius raised his hand as she spoke, and in it was a strange metal object, carved and ornate. This was a signal. The response was so fast that we all stared in stunned disbelief while it happened. Before there was time to react, it was over. Three of the Volturi soldiers leaped forward,
and Irina was completely obscured by their gray cloaks. In the same instant, a horrible metallic screeching ripped through the clearing. Kaya slithered into the center of the gray melee, and the shocking squealing sound exploded into a startling upward shower of sparks and tongues of flame. The soldiers leaped back from the sudden inferno, immediately retaking their places in the guard's perfectly straight line. Kaya stood alone beside the blazing remains of Irina, the metal object in his hand still throwing a thick jet of flame into the pyre. With a small clicking sound, the fire shooting from Caius's hand disappeared. A gasp rippled through the mass of witnesses behind the Volturi. We were too aghast to make any noise at all. It was one thing to know that death was coming with fierce, unstoppable speed. It was another thing to watch it happen. Caius smiled coldly. Now she has taken full responsibility for her actions. His eyes flashed to our front line, touching swiftly on Tanya's and Kate's frozen forms. In that second, I understood that Caius had never underestimated the ties of a true family. This was the ploy. He had not wanted Irina's complaint. He had wanted her defiance, his excuse to destroy her, to ignite the violence that filled the air like a thick, combustible mist. He had thrown a match. The strained peace of this summit already teetered more precariously than an elephant on a tightrope. Once the fight began, there would be no way to stop it. It would only escalate until one side was entirely extinct. Our side. Caius knew this. So did Edward. Stop them! Edward cried out, jumping to grab Tanya's arm as she lurched forward toward the smiling Caius with a maddened cry of pure rage. She couldn't shake Edward off before Carlyle had his arms locked around her waist. It's too late to help her, he reasoned urgently as she struggled. Don't give him what he wants. Kate was harder to contain. Shrieking wordlessly like Tanya, she broke into the first stride of the attack that would end with everyone's death. Rosalie was closest to her, but before Rose could clinch her in a headlock, Kate shocked her so violently that Rose crumpled to the ground. Emmett caught Kate's arm and threw her down, then staggered back, his knees giving out. Kate rolled to her feet and it looked like no one could stop her. Garrett flung himself at her, knocking her to the ground again. He bound his arms around hers, locking his hands around his own wrists. I saw his body spasm as she shocked him. His eyes rolled back in his head, but his hold did not break. Zafrina! Edward shouted. Kate's eyes went blank and her screams turned to moans. Tanya stopped struggling. Give me my sight back, Tanya hissed. Desperately, but with all the delicacy I could manage, I pulled my shield even tighter against the sparks of my friends, peeling it back carefully from Kate while trying to keep it around Garrett, making it a thin skin between them. And then Garrett was in command of himself again, holding Kate to the snow. If I let you up, will you knock me down again, Katie? He whispered. She snarled in response, still thrashing blindly. Listen to me, Tanya, Kate, Carlyle said in a low but intense whisper. Vengeance doesn't help her now. Irina wouldn't want you to waste your lives this way. Think about what you're doing. If you attack them, we all die. Tanya's shoulders hunched with grief, and she leaned into Carlyle for support. Kate was finally still. Carlyle and Garrett continued to console the sisters with words too urgent to sound like comfort, and my attention returned to the weight of the stairs that pressed down on our moment of chaos. From the corners of my eyes, I could see that Edward and everyone else besides Carlyle and Garrett were on their guard again as well. The heaviest glare came from Caius, staring with enraged disbelief at Kate and Garrett in the snow. Aro was watching the same too, incredulity the strongest emotion on his face. He knew what Kate could do. He had felt her potency through Edward's memories. Did he understand what was happening now? Did he see that my shield had grown in strength and subtlety far beyond what Edward knew me to be capable of? Or did he think Garrett had learned his own form of immunity?
The Volturi guard no longer stood at disciplined attention. They were crouched forward, waiting to spring the counterstrike the moment we attacked. Behind them, 43 witnesses watched with very different expressions than the one they'd worn entering the clearing. Confusion had turned to suspicion. The lightning-fast destruction of Irina had shaken them all. What had been her crime? Without the immediate attack that Caius had counted on to distract from his rash act, the Volturi witnesses were left questioning exactly what was going on here. Aro glanced back swiftly while I watched, his face betraying him with one flash of vexation. His need for an audience had backfired badly. I heard Stefan and Vladimir murmur to each other in quiet glee at Aro's discomfort. Aro was obviously concerned with keeping his white hat, as the Romanians had put it. But I didn't believe that the Volturi would leave us in peace just to save their reputation. After they finished with us, surely they would slaughter their witnesses for that purpose. I felt a strange, sudden pity for the mass of the strangers the Volturi had brought to watch us die. Dimitri would hunt them until they were extinct, too. For Jacob and Renesmee, for Alice and Jasper, for Alistair, and for these strangers who had not known what today would cost them, Dimitri had to die.